All right, good afternoon, members. I will call this hearing of the House Health, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. The first order of business will be to approve the minutes of January 25th, just yesterday. I hope everyone remembers them and has had a chance to review the minutes. Is there a motion to approve?
Madam Chair, no, so moved.
Okay, Representative Backer. You know what? Excuse me, I forgot to do the roll. Let's, if you would withdraw that for a moment, Representative Backer. We need to take the roll so we know we have a quorum. So everyone, if you would unmute yourself and just answer present when your name is called. Ms. Niedernhofer?
Liebling?
Present.
Hewitt?
Present.
Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Eklund?
Eklund, present.
Backer?
Backer, present.
Bonner?
Present.
Bierman?
Present.
Bolden?
Present.
Damoth?
Present.
Freiberg?
Present.
Grunagen?
Present.
Keel? Morrison?
Present.
Munson?
Present.
Pryor?
Is that Pryor or Ryer? Sorry.
Pryor with a P. Quam?
Present.
Ryer?
Present.
Schultz?
Present.
Wolgamott?
Present.
We'll go back to Keel. And Pryor.
Okay, a quorum is present. Thank you, Ms. Niedernhofer. So now we will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from Representative Backer. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please unmute yourself and say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, none opposed. Thank you. The motion passes. The minutes are approved. Okay, so members, we are going to start out today. This is going to be our first bill hearing of the session. So it's going to be an interesting experience. We haven't done this before quite like this in the virtual environment. So we'll all have to be patient, I think, and just do our best here and see how it goes. First, we're going to start out with a brief overview. Since the bill we're going to hear pertains to the individual and small group insurance market, we thought it would be helpful to start out with a brief overview of that area. And so we have with us Grace Arnold, who's the Acting Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And Ms. Arnold, Commissioner Arnold, are you there? I see you now. All right,
yep.
Well,
I'm here.
Thank you for being here. I'm gonna ask you to introduce yourself and go ahead with your presentation.
Great, good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members. So for the record, my name is Grace Arnold and I'm the temporary commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I have with me today Assistant Commissioner Peter Brickwitty, who oversees government and external affairs for the department. So I'm going to wait just one moment. He's going to run the slides for me. Okay.
Is
anyone else getting like electric?
Yeah. I was going to say this is if you have a seizure disorder, you don't want to watch that.
Madam Chair, apologies for that technology issue. Let me see if we can fix that again. Is that better?
Yeah,
that's much better.
Thank you.
Right. So before we dive in, I'll just say that I'm here to provide a high level overview, as Chair Liebling said, of the individual and small group markets in Minnesota. Before we go through the presentation, I just want to note that the Department of Commerce shares regulatory authority over the fully insured market with the Department of Health, and MnSure provides the shopping portal through which consumers can have their eligibility for plans for subsidies determined, and then they can shop and choose a plan.
And Ms. Arnold, I'm going to stop you right here. You already used a term that members may not know. Fully insured market. Could you
wait for it. There you go. So before I dive into talking about the markets, I want to give a picture of where Minnesotans get their health coverage and in which cases the departments have oversight. So you see here a pie chart. I'll note that this is a combination of a couple of data sets. So this is mostly to show kind of overall where Minnesotans get their market. There are, is underlying data that that builds up this chart. So there are three main sources of coverage for individuals: public programs, which are state-run programs, and federally run programs. The self-insured market are generally large employers, although some smaller employers do opt to self-insure. In those cases, the employer takes the risk. So if there's a year where claims are less than premiums, the employer directly gets the benefit. If there's a year where claims are higher than premiums, then the employer would pay for it. The fully insured market is this sort of darker turquoise here, is composed of a group market, large group, small group, which is employers under 50, and the individual market, which are individuals and families shopping on their own. This right side of your screen are the areas where the departments have authority. It's about a quarter of the market. In those cases, the insurer is taking the risk. So in times where claims are higher than premiums, the insurer, you know, eats the cost, and in times where they're lower, then they would get the benefit. The individual market has approximately 160,000 people as of October of 2020. And of those people, about 70% purchase their coverage through MinSure. All right. So the individual market serves Minnesotans who purchase insurance for themselves or their families through MinSure, through insurance agents, or through insurance companies directly. We have here the average rate changes for 2021 coverage in the individual market. You'll note that these rate changes reflect a stable market. The map on the right shows the number, or shows the plans that consumers have to choose from. So each of the colors doesn't represent a number of plans, it represents the specific plans. And you can see at the bottom which plans offer in which counties. In all counties, Minnesotans have a choice of at least two carriers. I will note that COVID-19, Peter, can you go back to the previous slide? There we go. Thank you. COVID-19 did not have a significant impact on rates. And according to MinSure, in 2021 open enrollment, about half of households purchasing in the individual market received tax credits. Despite all the stability, affordability is still a problem, largely due to the underlying cost of healthcare. And premiums and deductibles are out of reach for some Minnesotans. Individual market rate increases have been moderate in recent years, due in part to the reinsurance program. All right, so this is talking about the benchmark plan. For those that aren't familiar with the concept of the benchmark plan, it's the second lowest cost silver plan. So in the individual market, plans get metal levels, and those correspond to the generosity of the plans. 60% actuarial value, which means you can expect to pay about 40% of your costs, are bronze plans, and then up to platinum plans, which pay 90% of the cost. So the subsidy level is pegged off of the second lowest cost silver plan in the relevant county. This table shows a few examples of what individual and family plans are in a few cities throughout the state. I'll note that these premiums reflect the effect of reinsurance, which is to lower premiums by about 20%. Next slide. So I mentioned the different metal levels previously, but this provides a little bit more information. So MNsure enrollment is about half bronze plans, which means that consumers are opting for plans that have about a 65% actuarial value. On the right, you can see sample coverage at that level. So your deductible would be about just under $6,000. You would have a co-insurance of about 35% and an out-of-pocket max of about $8,500 if you were in a bronze plan. Similarly for silver and gold. And there are no platinum plans currently marketed. All right. So this slide shows the enrollment distribution by age. I'll note that we have most of the data for MNsure here. We do not have publicly available data for the entirety of the individual market. So on MNsure, just under 40% of individuals purchasing through MNsure are 55 and over. And then you can see the rest is made up of the next 10-year age cohorts. So the small group market, again, is available for employers that have 50 full-time employers or fewer. There are more carriers in the small group market, and here you can see the average rate changes. This market has been fairly stable as well, although rate changes are slightly higher. You can see here that Blue Cross, Blue Plus, Health Partners, Medica, and United, the two blues here are under their license that Commerce regulates and their license that the Department of Health regulates, similarly for United here. Preferred ones, Sanford and Quartz, have more limited service areas. In general, premiums in the small group market are comparable to individual market premiums. In previous years, there have been differences between the two, and there has been some shifting in between markets. Next slide. So Representative Schultz asked that, and Chair Liebling asked that we share a little bit of information about the family glitch. Very fun name. I may or may not have had a colleague who went as Glitch for Halloween one year. This is a longstanding issue that's not unique to Minnesotans. Essentially, if you're offered employer coverage as an individual, you can, and then your family coverage is much more expensive, you can be determined, your coverage can be determined to be affordable for you, but if you try to purchase it for your family, it's not affordable. But the calculation doesn't take into account the high cost of your family offer of coverage. So fixing this glitch likely comes with a cost, but that cost represents financial assistance to Minnesotans to help them better afford their insurance. There are also active discussions at the federal level about this topic, and we're monitoring those. So Chair Liebling, that's the end of my presentation. I'm always happy to give my team's contact information out in case anyone has questions. And I can take a few questions.
All right, well, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Arnold. And I know you have to leave and Mr. Brickwitty will be here if there are any further questions for the Commerce Department. And I know from past experience, he's usually pretty capable of handling any questions we might have, but thank you so much. I don't see any questions. Oh, I see Representative Grunhagen has a question. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for the presentation. Quick question. You referenced the reinsurance market. I believe that ends this year unless we, renew it again and put it forward, if I understand correctly. If that would go away, what would happen to the rates on the fully insured side, especially the individual market?
Sure. So, thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative. So just to be clear, the reinsurance program is only for the individual markets, in effect, the other markets. premiums would go up about 25%. So premiums are decreased 20%, but would go up 25%. And there's some math behind it that I'm happy to explain to anyone. My actuaries had to explain it to me several times before that made sense to me. So, you know, I think, you know, in relation to reinsurance, that was passed in 2017 when the market was really about to collapse. And one of the things you saw at the beginning of my presentation was that the market is much more stable, which I think is a good opportunity to have a conversation about whether or not reinsurance is the right way to subsidize the market going forward.
Okay, thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at slide 3 and slide 7, there's an incongruity because you've got quarts on slide 3 listed as new for 2021 for average rate changes NA, which that's understandable. But then on slide 7, average rate change, you have quarts listed as minus 1.6%. Clarification on that incongruity?
Commissioner Arnold?
Chair Liebling and Representative, that's two different markets. So the individual market, quartz was new this year. They had not offered coverage in the individual market previously. They had offered coverage in the small group market. So they were offering to businesses that that provide their employees with health insurance that have 50 employees or smaller. And then they decided to enter the individual market this year.
Madam Chair, thank you for that.
Okay. Great clarification. All right. Well, thank you so much, Commissioner. We really appreciate your help getting us started today.
And thank you very much. I appreciate
all right.
it.
All right. Okay. So members, we have reached this point in the session where we're going to hear our first bill. So we're going to hear House File 11. So Representative Schultz is going to move that House File 11 be recommended to be re-referred to the Commerce Finance and Policy Committee.
Can we adopt the DE amendment first?
Yes. Well, first we have to move the bill to get it before us. I know we're all kind of, I'm looking
of
at
practice.
My notes here to, I'm out of practice too. And then Representative Schultz is going to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the order in which she would like to have it discussed. And just for members who might be new, it's kind of a it's sort of our custom and usage to let an author of a bill, when it first comes to committee, do a delete everything amendment to get the bill in shape. And we usually don't debate that too much, although we could, but it's kind of a courtesy that we let them do it and then we debate it. But so why don't we, if it's okay with everybody, we could vote just, I think we can just do a voice vote on adopting the DE amendment, and then we will be discussing the bill, essentially the DE amendment, which then becomes the bill. So any questions about that or concerns? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor of the adopting the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So with that, Representative Schultz, if you would go ahead and explain your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Lee Blaine and members of the committee. This is a small bill, but it does big things. So House File 11 is what we're calling the Minnesota Care Public Option. And the goal is to increase health insurance coverage across the state and improve affordability by giving Minnesotans the option to choose comprehensive coverage. So this bill really continues the work that I started with Senator Tony Lurie and Chair Liebling in 2016 to expand Minnesota care to those above 275% of the federal poverty level. And it also extends the work done last session by Representatives Mann and Lippert on a public option. House File 11 represents aspects of these previous bills, and we will hopefully continue to work closely with our departments, agencies, and stakeholders to craft a public option that's both significant but also very practical in moving forward. And I know there's a lot more work ahead, and I know it's been difficult in this remote environment, but we wanted to get the bill out early in order to have more conversations with the public and to improve the bill and make it stronger. So the bill rolls out the public option in three different phases. The first two phases are extending coverage to more people. So in beginning in 2022, we're allowing two groups currently excluded from Minnesota Care to enroll within the existing income limits. The first group are those caught in that family glitch that the commissioner described, and the second group is covering undocumented immigrants. I'm not going to explain the family glitch unless people have questions, but under this bill, it's trying to get more people eligible if they fall into that problem where their family members can't afford coverage through their employer. The exclusion of undocumented immigrants or undocumented Minnesotans from Minnesota Care and MnSure and also from Medicaid is really a crisis, and we see this in light of the pandemic. And we have found how important it is to make sure everyone has access to healthcare and how that is a benefit to all of us. So extending coverage to that group of individuals is really important, and I hope we can get bipartisan support for this bill. Starting in 2023, the public option would then be open to small employers who could contribute to coverage for their employees through Minnesota Care, and hopefully also use the pre-tax dollars to do so. Would also extend coverage to Minnesotans earning above the cutoff of 200% of the federal poverty level if they meet all the other eligibility requirements. And this poverty level is about $25,000 for a single person and $52,000 for a family of four. And these premiums would be based on an income-based sliding fee scale. So delaying the implementation of this bill will give us time to work with CMS, the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to get waivers to ensure that we can leverage and maximize federal funding for this public option and expand coverage to more people and make sure that we're maximizing pass-through of federal funding for our basic health plan. So we will come back to this committee after it goes through Commerce, and we'll have a longer discussion of the fiscal impact, and hopefully by then we'll also know more about what will happen under the Biden administration. The last phase of this bill is to work towards delivery transformation, trying to improve access across all of Minnesota, both geographically and to more populations. And we really want to evaluate whether this expansion is a good idea and if it's effective, and look at other delivery options and payment methodologies. So currently in Minnesota Care, and this is retained in the bill, private health plans are paid through a competitive bidding process, capitated rates, and they negotiate reimbursement rates with hospitals and providers. So those rates, those reimbursement rates, are negotiated privately between the health plans and the providers, and then they submit competitive bids for capitated payments from the state. So this is being retained, and we just want to make sure this reporting will look at other payment arrangements so we can provide affordable health care in the most efficient way possible. So that I believe the public option, this bill will strengthen the existing individual market through more competition. It will decrease out-of-pocket spending. You saw how expensive those bronze plans are in terms of high deductible and high coinsurance or cost sharing. It will hopefully decrease the number of people who are uninsured. People sign up, they find it affordable. And it should reduce the cost of uncompensated care. And those costs are passed on to all of us through higher premiums. So this will benefit all of us. And this bill ultimately puts Minnesota in the best position to leverage federal funding, as the Biden administration has indicated support for public options and building from the Affordable Care Act. So I hope we can take the opportunity to lead on healthcare reform as a state and utilize federal funds to do so. So I'm working really hard to get bipartisan support, and I'm open to comments, questions, and suggestions throughout this session to move this bill forward. And okay. So that's all of my presentation. Thank you, Chair Liebling.
All right, and then thank you, Representative Schultz. And Ms. Greenfield, I don't know if she was also interested in wanted to help present the bill, but I think you probably covered it.
I think she's just here for questions.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. So, so we have several amendments that have been offered, and we have a big list of testifiers. And I think that what we should do, I want to make sure that we have plenty of time for questions and discussion in addition to hearing from our testifiers. So I'm kind of inclined to start with the amendments. If members are, if members are ready for that, I don't want to, well, maybe we should go with our testifiers first. Change my mind on that. Let's go with the testifiers. And I'm gonna ask them all to speak very briefly because we do wanna have time for discussion. And we do have a very long list here. We have nine people. And I know it's we wanna hear from them, but we also do need to be able to get to our amendments. So I'm gonna first call Cindy Vanderpoel, if you're here, and ask you if you can please keep your remarks to about 2 or 3 minutes. We would appreciate it. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Cindy Vanderpoel from Chippewa County. Together with my family, we operate a 320-acre farm and meat company, Pastures of Plenty. We raise hogs and cattle and laying hens, all of which we direct market to co-op stores and customers around the state of Minnesota. We are fortunate that our products were in demand in 2020 due to COVID-19. But with that, we ran the risk of being exposed to COVID-19 with all the people that we were in contact with every day. That just added to our everyday fear of someone getting hurt. Just doing chores like moving cattle or working with the hogs. When you work with a 350-pound sow and her litter of piglets, you always run the chance of feeling that she is feeling like her piglets are being threatened and she will turn on you in a second and hurt you. Over the years, we have lived through this fear that something could happen and someone may need to go to the emergency room or even worse, end up in the hospital. Right now, if this was to happen, we would run the risk of losing everything that we hold so dear to our heart, our farm. Over the years, our family qualified for Minnesota Care, but as our children have gotten older, we do not qualify anymore. When you farm, you don't take home a lot of money because most of it goes back into making improvements into your farm operation. We have looked into health insurance for Josh and I, but it is about $1,800 a month. It's almost everything that we would take home from our farm every month. So that is why we did not have health insurance for all of 2019 and 2020. We felt it was smarter to just put extra money that we had at the end of the month into a savings account and hope we didn't need to use it for any health issues. We did find out that in December, we did qualify for Minnesota Care because of our low income in 2019. But I will tell you that when we file our taxes in 2020, we will not qualify for health insurance again. We will be back to praying and hoping no one gets sick or hurt every day. So please support the buy-in bill for health insurance so that families that work hard every day to put food on their own table and even maybe tables of yours can relax and do the thing that they love, farm. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Dan Marshall. Welcome
yes, hello.
To the committee.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Dan Marshall. Our family owns Mischief Toy Store, and we're members of Main Street Alliance. After over 22 years selling toys in St. Paul, we know all about puzzles, but instead of showing off games to our customers, much of our time is spent trying to solve the puzzle of healthcare. Affording healthcare has become the number one threat to our small family business. Since the ACA passed, our family's income has fluctuated and we've bounced between buying insurance on the MinSure Exchange and qualifying for Minnesota Care. In 2019, our income increased slightly forcing this back onto the MinSure exchange, where the best deal was a high deductible private plan that cost well over $1,200 more per month for the premiums alone. Then, of course, the pandemic hit. Our revenue, like most small businesses, dropped significantly. Of course, the cost of our insurance did not. The puzzle of which plan we qualify for every year is extremely frustrating. I spend hours on hold with the county health department and MinSure attempting to re-enroll. It always happens during our busiest season. Allowing individuals and small businesses to buy into Minnesota Care would be a true game changer for us and for thousands of other small business owners. It would offer predictability so that we could plan for expenses from year to year, afford coverage with reasonable premiums and deductibles, deduct the cost of coverage like big businesses do, and reinvest the savings back into our business. It would save us the exhausting effort of evaluating dozens of different plans every year and the hours of time spent on hold. For some small businesses, it would allow them to add health insurance as an employee benefit for the first time, helping them to compete with big corporations. With the COVID pandemic challenging the finances of every small business, now is the time for change. Please adopt the Minnesota Care buy-in option. Small business owners and their employees from across the state will thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marshall. We appreciate your testimony. I see that I've got a couple of members have their hands up, and I'm wondering if we can, I'm gonna call on them, but I'd like us to get through the testifiers before we take any further questions. Representative Quam?
Madam Chair, I just wanna make sure that the testifiers will all be available by the end of the testimony. So if any have to leave early, I'd like the opportunity for questions. I'll just hold my question till later then.
Yeah, thank you for that. And so I just would ask the testifiers to please stick with us through all of the testimony here, and it's moving right along. So hopefully it won't be too terribly long, and just to be available for questions. Representative Pryor?
Sure, I'll wait till the end too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, so next on our list is Dan Andreessen. Welcome to the committee. Oh, we can't hear you, but now we can.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen. I'm the Senior Director of Policy and Government Affairs with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The council represents the 7 nonprofit plans here in Minnesota, and as was previously mentioned, offers products in the individual group markets, as well as serves as MCOs in many of the state public programs. We appreciate Chair Schultz for reaching out. We've met with her earlier last week, and I know we have some meetings in the future, and we'll continue to meet with her as this bill goes forward. We do want to thank her for the piece in Section 6 regarding the family glitch. It is an issue that we support and definitely need to have that fixed. We also support the Minnesota Care Program in its current form. However, we are concerned about the language in this bill and the impact to the program as it goes forward, but also the impact to the individual and group markets, in main part because Minnesota Care is not a comparative insurance product compared to those that you see in the commercial product space. We do think that there's gonna be a significant impact to this and may need to have independent actual modeling to look at that impact as we kind of go forward. So in this current form, the council is concerned with House File 11, but we will continue to meet with Representative Schultz as this bill goes forward.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Appreciate your testimony. Next is Jack Ramsland. Welcome. Please just state your name and who you're with and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. I'm Jack Ramsland. I'm a small farm worker in Winona, Minnesota, a member leader with the Land Stewardship Project, and I'm currently insured by Minnesota Care. In my farming community, I have many friends whose access to healthcare has affected their lives. A friend and farm owner I work for intentionally has to clock in late every single day at her off-farm job in order to remain under the income limit for Minnesota Care. This story is just one of many and represents the reality that many small farmers face. It makes no sense for a person to have to choose between quality income and access to quality health insurance. Many friends and I worry about starting small farm businesses because we may lose access to our health insurance. Without proper access to health insurance, we allow our economy to stagnate. The holes in the current system have become abundantly clear in the wake of this pandemic. Now is the time to expand Minnesota Care and remove the income limit to stimulate the small businesses that make this state great. With a guarantee of health insurance not tied to employment, local economies would thrive. Small businesses could retain more quality employees through offering Minnesota Care, and small farmers can put more love and passion into providing food to their communities instead of worrying about income limits or paying the expensive private insurance they can't afford. Let Minnesota be remembered for providing quality care to her citizens and for all who live here when they need it at most. Expanding Minnesota Care is an investment for the future of a thriving Minnesota. Communities across our state, from Laverne to Rochester to Glencoe, need this bill. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify as a rural person, and please vote yes on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Ramsland. Appreciate your testimony. Dan Dwight.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I apologize for the weird light in my basement here. For the record, my name is Dan Dwight, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. As you probably know, the Minnesota Business Partnership is a membership organization consisting of business leaders from Minnesota's largest employers that employ more than 500,000 workers across the state. While Minnesota ranks near the top in the nation for healthcare coverage and having world-class healthcare providers, costs for consumers and employers have been growing at an unsustainable rate. Healthcare costs for families, employers, and the government are causing undue budget constraints. While we support Minnesota Care as it currently operates, we believe a private market-based approach is a better solution for reining in escalating healthcare costs. My fear is that House File 11 will destabilize an already fragile health insurance marketplace that offers multiple coverage options in all parts of the state. It will also likely lead to cost shifting to private pay patients, leading to higher and higher health insurance premiums for those who depend on coverage provided by their employer. This bill could put an end, this bill will put healthcare access at risk for many Minnesotans, especially in greater Minnesota, as healthcare operators may cease operations due to unsustainable government reimbursement rates. In closing, we pursue patient-centered market-based solutions for controlling cost increases in healthcare delivery that increase access and patient choice. Madam Chair and members, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Dwight. Next, we have Emilia from Unidos, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Emilia Gonzalez-Avalos, and I am the Executive Director of Unidos, Minnesota. We are a Latino-based organization that builds power for race, social, and economic justice. I am providing testimony in support of House File 11 as a nonprofit leader that serves thousands of mixed status families and as a daughter of an undocumented immigrant who remains battling COVID-19 in a county hospital. Minnesota is home to approximately 90,000 undocumented and predominantly essential workers that are our parents, our relatives, neighbors, and community members. While many Latinos are part of this population, this issue is also it also impacts Asian immigrants and disproportionately impacts Black immigrants. Contrary to anti-immigrant inaccuracies, undocumented workers have been historically excluded from unemployment insurance, Affordable Care Act, and many other programs in the state and federal government. There are countless reasons and studies about contributions of the undocumented population in the country. What is also true is that there are approximately 175,000 members of Minnesota families that are also mixed status families who are generationally excluded and economically sanctioned when our undocumented relatives are also excluded and disenfranchised. I am providing testimony from my father's hospital right now, one of the thousands of essential workers that have faced the brunt of the pandemic. In particular, my father has been in Minnesota for 30 years and has been waiting for his immigration remedy for over 20 years now. I honestly don't know if he will leave to receive that document that says, welcome to America. I encourage members of this committee to support House File 11 over the premise that Ricardo Lemus Morales said best, if the work is essential, the rights cannot be optional. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and we send our deepest wishes for your father's recovery.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Bentley Graves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We represent 6,000 employers of all sizes and all industries in all corners of the state. I want to thank Representative Schultz for the conversations we've had thus far on House File 11, and I also want to thank her for the focus of the bill on small employers. This is very much, as you've heard today, a segment of our economy that certainly needs help when it comes to health coverage and affording health coverage. So I want to thank you for the focus on that. We do share some of the current concerns that have been raised thus far by Mr. Dwight and Mr. Andreessen. You know, we survey our members regularly on a whole host of issues. Have recently surveyed them on the idea of a public option and interest in it, and have found a good bit of concern as it relates to some of the things that Mr. Dwight noted, both as it relates to potential increase for costs in the commercial market for private payers, and also an impact on access to providers, particularly out there in Greater Minnesota. And these concerns, as was noted, are rooted in the idea that this is a program and an option that's built on the infrastructure of public program payment rates, which tend to be significantly less than that which is paid by commercial payers and those with private insurance. And over time, obviously, this raises concerns again about access to providers and raises concerns for providers, again, particularly out there in Greater Minnesota, but also about potential for increased costs to those left with commercial insurance and those with private health insurance. But again, I appreciate the opportunity to engage in this discussion because this is a significant issue for a large share of our members. We will look forward to continuing the conversation with Representative Schultz and the rest of the members of this committee to find ways to bring increased coverage, increased access, and greater affordability to health insurance for Minnesota's employers and their employees. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. We appreciate you being here today. And the last person on our list is Teresa Mace.
Mace.
Okay, welcome.
Hardest four letters.
Well, I'm an IE too, so I understand.
Yeah. I'm Teresa Meese. I own Honest Home Inspection up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. My family was one of the many casualties of the financial collapse of 2009. We lost our business and found ourselves unhoused with a baby. With a lot of hard work and the help of state services, we were able to eventually get back on our feet and start a handyman business. We graduated from MA to MinCare at that time. Minnesota Care was quite possibly the best insurance I've had in my life. I am a second generation business owner. My parents had high deductible, low coverage insurance, so the rule growing up was that we couldn't go to the doctor unless there was a significant injury or dire illness. This conditioned me, as it has so many other hardworking business owners, to avoid seeking medical care. As an adult woman on MinCare, I was able to get my yearly recommended exams. Because of my MinCare coverage, I went to the doctor when I needed to. I did not feel compelled to wait and see and suffer from avoidance of care. Eventually, we transitioned into our home inspection business and moved from MinCare to the open market. That was like being pushed off a cliff. The cost of care was manageable under MinCare, just under about $100 a month for coverage for the two of us adults at that time. But the coverage we could afford on the market, even with the pay down from the tax credit, was over $300 a month, plus higher copays, plus no coverage for needed services like the allergist. I found myself once again delaying medical care. Speaking as that second generation business owner, I will tell you that I have never understood why health insurance should be tied to employment. The small business owners who are lauded by many as the backbone of our economy, well, a lot of us just can't afford to care for our own health. You want folks to be bold entrepreneurs, but that means literally risking our lives to create businesses and jobs. Hearing the stories from other small business owners today has honestly moved me very deeply. We come from many industries, but we're all passionate about the work we do. Now we need you to do the work that you were called to do. You and your capacity as public servants must choose to expand access to MinCare. The citizens of Minnesota work hard, but we shouldn't be paying for our work with our health.
Thank you very much, Ms. Meese. Appreciate your testimony today. So we have reached the end of our list of testifiers. I have a list of members with questions. And first on the list, well, it's Representative Quam, then Pryor, then Grunhagen. And if other members have questions, let us know, we'll add you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And testimony that we had from the lady that is in farming, and possibly some of the other ones that might know, we have many small groups, such as co-ops and other groups that are getting together to, you know, bundle for buying small group policies instead as an alternative to the individual market. And I was wondering if any of the testifiers had looked at that option and, you know, why they would choose this over the small group options that might be out there.
So thank you, Representative Crum. I'll tell you what, if any of you, if you're on camera, if you want to take that question, just wave your hand and I'll call on you. Okay, Ms. Vanderpool, you're probably the one that he was going to initially ask anyway. Go ahead, please.
Yes. So when I say that we were looking at $1,800 a month, that was actually through a co-op buy-in program. And it was $1,800 a month with a very high deductible. And so that was just not something that was doable for us. Somebody that was on Minnesota Care, you know, we were paying in $150 a month or a little bit more, and that was doable. Like I said, we do not bring in a lot of money from our farm. We go month to month. And, you know, that's part of farming. We're not a big farm. And so we make do with what we can.
Okay. And Representative Quam, follow up?
Yeah, so this would be more in general, maybe to the chair. When I was seeing presentations, I did not see anything that covered the difference in reimbursement rates for Minnesota Care versus some of the private avenues. And so it'd be really great for the committee to understand what the impact would be if we shift a large percentage from other policies to Minnesota Care, because in the past, my understanding is that there was a lower reimbursement rate versus the private insurance, and the impact that our local hospitals and clinics might see in decreased revenue. Because I understand in the past, Mayo Clinic and their Scottsdale Hospital, when different programs changed, they put a cap on government percentage of patients underneath the government plan. Now, that was a few years ago. I haven't seen new data, but in greater Minnesota, some of our healthcare facilities are very tight, especially with the issues that hit them with the closure and you know, having to idle when we had the COVID shutdown. So offline, maybe we can get that information. It would better understand the impacts of this bill that might be unintended.
Okay, thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Schultz, did you want to respond at all?
Sure, I'll respond to both of his questions. Representative Quam, you asked about those co-op options. Many of those, if not all of them, don't allow coverage for pre-existing conditions. So in addition to being really expensive with high deductibles and high premiums, they may not cover everything. So in my policy circle, some of those are we labeled junk insurance. They just don't cover what you need covered. In terms of your second question about the reimbursement rates, that's proprietary. Those rates are negotiated between our private health plans, which operate Minnesota Care program, and the hospitals and providers. So they're negotiating those rates. It might be difficult to get that information that you've requested. It would be great to see those rates and what they actually reimburse different providers, but those are proprietary data.
Madam Chair.
Representative Quam.
Frankly, without knowing the impact to our hospitals, especially in greater Minnesota, I think it'd be dangerous to do a major shift between these different pools, just because I've been hearing from different entities of just how badly they are doing financially. And once the CARES Act and some of the other federal funds dissipate, they're fragile. And going in and saying that we don't know what the impact will be, that's dangerous. So unless we can find out the actual impact to our healthcare providers that this would cause, I would be hesitant to go forward blindly, because once we kill these hospitals, it'll be hard to bring them back. Thank you.
Chair Liebling, may I respond to that quickly?
Okay, Representative Schultz.
So we do care about making sure our hospitals, particularly those in rural Minnesota and greater Minnesota, are financially stable and can continue to operate. It's better that they get paid for the services than not paid for services. So I think it's important that we continue to try to cover more people in the state so they're paid for those services. But also, I've been communicating with hospitals and I've been reaching out to them to see that their current payments, if they're satisfied with those. So I'm waiting to hear from different hospitals across the state. And the association on the impact. So we definitely want to do some actuarial analysis to see what would happen to the existing individual and small group market. And we may be able to get some of that information you desire from that APCT, the All Payers Claims Database as well.
Okay, I'm going to go now to, I have Representative Pryor, Grunhagen, and Hewitt, and then we're going to move to amendments. So Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did have a question for Mr. Marshall. And first of all, over the holidays, we were shopping virtually at Mischief's Toys and just really enjoyed the experience. So obviously, you know, I'm someone that really appreciates the business that you're in. And I guess I would like to hear more about the cost of the premium and then the high deductibles that you have right now, how that's impacting your family and your ability to keep this really valuable business I really value, I'm going.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And Madam Chair and Representative Pryor, it's just a monthly thing that comes up. My wife has type 1 diabetes since she was a child. And so that's like something that we have to cover no matter what. And her supplies, we hit her deductible within the first month of every plan year. My kids are healthy though. And like last year, my son, he was chopping wood. He's 18 and he hit his thumb, nearly chopped his thumb off. And we are we're trying to take him to the emergency room, and he's arguing with us because he doesn't want our family to have to pay for that deductible for the visit to the hospital. He ended up getting like 19 stitches on his thumb. And as a parent, I feel pretty terrible that kind of messages come through to my kids that know that you don't go to the hospital, even if you've grievously injured yourself or gotten hurt somehow, because you have to worry about money. And I wish I could be teaching them a different lesson, but after 22 years as a small business owner, that's what they've taken in. So I think we are far from alone in viewing healthcare services that way as a small business owners.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. So I've got, I have Representative Grunhagen or Representative Hewitt. Representative Grunhagen, could you, if you wanted to hold on to your question, you're going to have an amendment, I think. Is it just a brief question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to address.
Go ahead.
Yes, and I appreciate the testimonies. I've sold health insurance since 1978, and I have an independent insurance agency. I sold health insurance when there was no networks and no pre-certification. So I'm probably dating myself. And you could go to any provider you wanted to. But I think people need to realize that you're supporting a solution here that is going to reduce healthcare access. I happen to agree with the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Commerce. You know, the Minneapolis Tribune came out with an article a couple of years ago. We had over 30 hospitals in our state that were in fiscal crisis due to low, and the article even admitted, due to low reimbursement rates from Medicare and Medicaid, okay? Minnesota Care reimburses along those lines. And, you know, we don't know all the reimbursement rates, which I would like to know, but we did pass a transparency bill a couple of years ago. You can go up to your local clinic and it's going to list, I think, 25 healthcare services that clinic offers, the ones that are most used. And it's going to show private insurance reimbursement, Medicare and Medicaid. And you'll find that Medicaid reimburses at the lower rate. And unfortunately, Minnesota Care reimburses at that rate. So what you're supporting here is actually going to reduce your access. It will take, and it's going to create a two-tier healthcare system, one for the rich and the privileged, and a second-rate one for the rest of us. I have a private sector solution under the amendment that would actually work and help you have affordable healthcare instead of having more government healthcare. Finally, Tom Gillespie used to be the state demographer in our state. And in 2010, he issued a report. He's supposed to be nonpartisan. He's retired now. That said, if we don't get the control, if we don't get the growth of government healthcare under control, at some point in the future in the state of Minnesota, there will be no additional money for K-12 roads or bridges or higher ed. So this bill takes us in completely the wrong direction. It's going to create more problems than it solves. And it wasn't in the governor's budget that was just issued, the public buy-in, and the Senate is against it. So I don't think it has life this session, but my amendment would bring life and hope to your problems. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. You know, it's always fascinating to me when people talk about creating a system, an unequal system, because boy, oh boy, do we ever have an unequal system now. And just listening to these folks testify, you can be a business owner and have absolutely no insurance and be unable to afford insurance. I mean, it's just, what kind of country are we? It's just,
thanks, you know, for a
so anyway, we have Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And real quickly here, I have to recall my days from working in the emergency room and having patients come in and being way, way too late for coming in and saying, you know, a question would always be asked, why did you wait so long? And it's because they'd come back to me. And the same thing when I was in the ambulance, still, I had a $10,000, I had a $5,000 deductible. And I waited because I can't afford that deductible. And unfortunately, even if they get discharged, or many of these people went to the ICU for even more cost, and if they would get to, they'd have to negotiate with the hospitals. The hospitals, I know, do everything they can to help with this. And this is what's hurting our hospitals, because they're eating these $5,000-$10,000 deductibles. And I'm glad to see that our insurance plans our Minnesota Council on Health Plans and our Minnesota Business Partnership is helping with this, because we want our farmers to spend that $5,000 on their farms and not in this situation. And so please, let's move forward with this plan. This is a great plan, and Representative Schultz, thanks for bringing it.
Okay, thank you, members. We are gonna now go to the amendments, and there's an A4 amendment. I think that's Representative Schumacher.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And go ahead, Representative Schumacher.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the A4 amendment requires that when people are going to enroll in this program, that they enroll during the enrollment period. We're really just looking to try and keep more of a fair playing field for the enrollments that go through there, and that people are not enrolling just when they have a need for enrollment, and that they were getting in and getting out of it. I think that not only does that challenge the actuarial projections that will be put into the program, but will also cause issues for just how people utilize the system there. And so we just wanted to, with this amendment, make sure that the enrollment period was the same as it would be for any other type of enrollment there. I did talk to Chair Schultz earlier today about this provision, and she said that it was something that she's interested in, and that we should work on it, especially in the Commerce Committee there. And so I will withdraw the amendment today, knowing that it is an issue that we need to continue to work on, and that we can do so in the appropriate committees.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative Schumacher. And you have the A6, and I should say we should, do you want to move the A6? I didn't say that on the last one, but since you've withdrawn it, but did you want to move the A6?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the A6th amendment. Madam Chair and members, the A6th amendment allows for managed care providers and providers to opt out of serving folks in the buy-in population. I think the questions that you've seen today and some of the comments that have been made, one of the bigger concerns about any kind of plan like this is just how the premiums are going to stay lower. And because we know that the premiums are lower because the reimbursements are lower, and how that can be sustainable throughout there. And so this gives kind of takes away the talking point that this will drive providers out of the system or close them down if they have the option of opting out of serving those populations for this. Again, just because if there's a growing number there that are reimbursing at a lower level than what the cost of care is, that's going to make it troublesome for them to survive. And so I also talked to Chair Schultz about this amendment as well, a little more complicated than what we have in the last 24 minutes today of committee, but she committed to continue to learn more about this area and try to dig into this concern that we have and try to find a workable solution. And so I will as well withdraw the A6 amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schumacher. So the A6 is withdrawn. The A7 amendment, Representative Gruenhagen.
I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
Okay. The A7 has been moved. Representative Gruenhagen.
Now, testifiers, pay close attention. This could actually help you in your situation rather than hurt you, okay, which is what the current bill will do. This is a delete all amendment, and basically it would replace the expansion of Minnesota Care with a private sector solution. It's called reference-based pricing health plans. It has been vetted by a number of industry leaders and medical doctors. Basically, what it would allow you to do is to select a health insurance plan that would reimburse at different rates above Medicare rates. In other words, you could select a plan that would pay 140% more or a reimbursement to a doctor or hospital than Medicare does. Or you could go to it 160% or 175% or even 200%. Now, what does this mean? This means when you go to your provider, you would have the ability to show him a plan or card that would show the reimbursement rate. He could either decide to accept it or reject it. You could then decide to pay the additional he wants or find a different medical provider. This plan could eliminate networks, ladies and gentlemen. Listen carefully. You could go to the doctor of your choice, and you would become the negotiator on what the reimbursement would be, not government. Okay, it would drop the price of insurance dramatically. Even pre-certification could eventually be eliminated, just like it was when I started selling health insurance. There was no pre-certification. There was no networks. That's the value of this plan. You need to look at this. I know we have a shorter period of time here, but if you wonder more about the plan that's being presented, I would reference you to John Delaney. He ran for the Democratic presidential nomination. And when he was told about Medicare for All, he went and checked with his CEOs in his state of hospital organizations. And every one of them told him, if you reimburse us at Medicare rates, we will close our doors. That's not my words. That's John Delaney, a Democrat's words. Minnesota Care reimburses at a lower rate than Medicare. You're going to cripple this industry and reduce your access. The plan I'm offering will drop premiums dramatically and allow you to negotiate with the provider and bring a private sector marketplace back into healthcare without crippling the healthcare industry and increasing your ability to have the healthcare that you need for you and your family. So, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions, and I also want a roll call. This is a question between socialism, more socialism, which we know doesn't work, and the private sector, which we know does. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Schultz.
It does cover pre-existing conditions. Okay, this plan covers pre-existing conditions.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Thank you, Chair Liebling and Representative Gruenhagen. And I think we've had several discussions on reference-based pricing, Representative Gruenhagen, and I like certain aspects of it. I think there are other models that may work just as well, like the Maryland model with global budgeting and payments. I don't think we want to try as a government to set prices or rates. The Minnesota Care Public Option, it's a private option. It is using private health plans that negotiate privately with private providers. Our current healthcare system is heavily subsidized. So we have this private-public partnership. It's subsidized through reinsurance, through premium tax credits, through our tax system where people can use pre-tax dollars to buy their health insurance if they're lucky and work for a large employer that offers good coverage. So we want to build on that current system of having this private-public partnership and using private health plans to negotiate reimbursement rates with hospitals. One of the problems is that hospitals are losing their negotiating ability to negotiate with plans to get reimbursement rates. So we need more health plans operating in Minnesota, and this proposal could increase the number health plans operating. So, and it could help stable, and you know, so when there's more plans operating, they, you know, hospitals and providers can have more negotiating power because they have alternative health plans to contract with. So I understand your concern about reimbursement rates at the Medicaid and Medicare level, but that's not what's happening in this proposal.
Okay, other questions from members? I'm not seeing any, so, okay. Now I am. Representative Bonner.
Thank you.
Bonner and then Ryer, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is maybe half comment, half question. I know that for a lot of folks, when they're going and looking for healthcare providers, you know, we have folks in our communities who are small business owners, who are young families, who have a lot on their plate. And part of the value of having healthcare through a provider is that you have sort of already had someone who's negotiated for you on your behalf, right? Because that's one thing off of your plate when you're trying to homeschool the kids and take care of dinner and get your work done. And I know that even just taking a trip to the doctor can be really challenging. I'll be upfront with you all right now. I need to go to the doctor. But because of my busy schedule, I really don't have a lot of time to do that. So making an appointment to go to a doctor and show them a card and ask them if they'll accept my rate doesn't sound very appealing to me. I have to be upfront with you, Representative Gruenhagen. In fact, it sounds like an extra trip to the doctor that I don't have time for. And I know a lot of families who have a lot more on their plates that probably are not going to be okay with that either. They need someone who can do the work for them. And so I guess, and maybe there's some testifiers who are still here with us. who can weigh in on this, but I'm just thinking that that might not be the most workable solution for a lot of average folks.
Okay, I'm going to go to Representative Ryer, and then we're going to take a vote on the amendment. Representative Ryer.
Can I have closing comments, Representative, Madam Chair?
I think, unless there's any further question, Representative Gruenhagen, I think we need to move on. Representative Ryer?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, testifiers. I appreciate hearing your experiences, and I'm grateful for you for being here. I want to speak from my experience as a person who spent about 12 years working at Blue Cross, much of it in research, talking to consumers, talking to business owners, talking to providers, agents, brokers. That's what I did for a living, to help the company guide its products and strategies. What I learned when we were doing things like building some new ways of getting information is that consumers do not want to be shopping for healthcare. They might want to shop for a computer. They might want to shop for a car. They might even not mind shopping for groceries, but they do not want to go doctor shopping. That's certainly true in the more day-to-day interactions, but when you have a heart attack or when you have something that's quite serious and you need ongoing care, you're in the hospital. My husband was hospitalized twice in January, and you know what those bills look like, right? I mean, all these people you didn't even know he saw, the subspecialists within subspecialists. That just doesn't fit. That's not a negotiated service that you want to get. You don't even know what they are. And I would just argue that there are very, very few people who want to do that. They're probably the same ones who like negotiating for a car. And look at the Saturn model. People didn't want to do that either. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Gruenhagen, I'll give you a very brief last word because we need to get to a vote.
I appreciate the chance. Madam Chair, I appreciate the chance to respond to some of those allegations. Number one, we're in this mess because of Obamacare, okay, which is another government solution, which was a disaster and filled with lies. Number two, you know, Representative Bonner, under my plan, you're going to be able to see the doctor. Under this plan, you're going to be standing in line waiting to see the doctor, okay, under expansion of Minnesota Care. Number three, you're going to have more competition under my plan, and you're going to have less competition because all this is an expansion to go to single payer healthcare, which is going to be a disaster, both in terms of access to healthcare and in terms of the waiting period. People are going to have to wait, and the taxes they're going to have to pay to try to bail this nonsense out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
Please
you.
Vote yes.
The clerk will take the roll. Ms. Niedernhofer, we can't hear you.
Liebling.
No.
Can you? Now I can't hear you. Hold on 1 second.
Tina, I thought I had you convinced.
Okay, maybe Zoom doesn't allow vote taking. No, of course it does.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Liebling.
Liebling, no.
Chair Liebling, no. Hewitt.
No.
Vice Chair Hewitt, no. Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Minority Leader Schumacher, aye. Ackland.
Ackland, yes.
Representative Ackland, aye. Backer.
Backer, aye.
Representative Backer, aye. Bonner.
No.
Representative Bonner, no. Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Representative Bierman, no. Bolden?
No.
Representative Bolden, no. Damuth?
Aye.
Representative Damuth, aye. Freiberg?
No.
Representative Freiberg, no. Gruenhagen?
Absolutely, yes.
Representative Gruenhagen, yes. Keel?
Yes.
Representative Keel, yes. Morrison?
Morrison, no.
Representative Morrison, no. Munson?
Munson, aye.
Representative Munson, aye. Pryor?
Pryor, no.
Representative Pryor, no. Quam?
Aye.
Representative Quam, aye. Ryer?
Ryer, no.
Representative Ryer, no. Schultz?
No.
Representative Schultz, no. Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, no.
Representative Wolgamott, no. There are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. On to the bill as amended. Are there any closing comments, Representative Schultz?
I just want to thank all of our testifiers for being here, and I want people to keep an open mind about this bill. I'm going to work really hard to get bipartisan support in the House and in the Senate. Thank you.
All right, so Representative Schultz renews her motion that House File 11, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll on the bill as amended.
Chair Liebling.
Liebling, aye.
Chair Liebling, aye. Hewitt.
Hewitt, aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Minority Leader Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Ackland.
Ackland, no.
Representative Ackland, no. Backer.
Backer, no.
Representative Backer, no. Bonner.
Bonner, aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Representative Bierman, aye. Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Bolden, aye. Damuth.
No.
Representative Damuth, no. Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Gruenhagen.
No.
Representative Gruenhagen, no. Keel.
No.
Representative Keel, no. Morrison.
Morrison, yes.
Representative Morrison, aye. Munson.
Munson, no.
Representative Munson, no. Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Representative Pryor, aye. Quam.
No.
Representative Quam, no. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Representative Ryer, aye. Schultz.
Yes.
Representative Schultz, aye. Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Wolgamott, aye. 11 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the Commerce Committee. And thank you very much, Representative Schultz. And just to clarify for members too, the intention with this bill is after Commerce, it will come back to us because there will be a fiscal note on it. And so there, we will have plenty of discussion. So we've actually ended here with 10 extra minutes. So I really appreciate, members, this is obviously the first time we've passed a bill in this format. And it's a little, always a little uncertain how the time is gonna go. And of course we're kind of really held to our timelines here. So I apologize if I've kind of moved people along a little quicker than needed to be. And hopefully we will have ample opportunity to have discussions, because I think they're really important. And I really do want to have a robust conversation debate in this committee and have us really work together on legislation. And really we'll try to do that and accommodate that. And so the next thing that we're going to have tomorrow, in tomorrow's hearing, we're going to be hearing a little bit about the governor's budget from as it affects this committee. And it's not going to be very, very detailed, just really an overview, because that too will change, just so everyone understands. When we get the forecast update, the governor's budget numbers will change. So we're not going to be too focused on the numbers. It's more of a concept overview. And then we're also going to be taking up House File 269, which is Representative Morrison's bill, colloquially known as PSIPAC, the Psychology Interjurisdictional Compact. So we'll be taking that up tomorrow as well. So with that, there being no further business before the committee right now, the committee is adjourned. Thank you. Have a great day, everyone.